Absolutely. I found this out later, Rich, from both Red and Larry, because when I got Red on the phone and I told him, Red, I want to be on the Boston Celtics, Red asked me to hold on. And so both he and Larry told me this individually later on, that they were having a meeting about the future of the team and the Boston Celtics at the time, because the Celtics had just lost to the Lakers in the 85 finals. And so here was a situation where Red asked me to hold on, and he told me how he put his hand over the mouthpiece, and he looked across the desk, and he said, hey, Larry, hey, Walton's on the phone here, says he wants to come be part of the Celtics. What do you think? And then Larry confirmed this later on in our own personal conversation when he looked back across Red's desk and he said, go get him, Red. And so the rest is history, and it was a very, very tough deal from the Clippers' point of view, not from mine, because I was willing and ready to come to do anything to be a part of this great Boston Celtic tradition and franchise and history. But the Clippers, I spent 6 years with them, and they wanted basically the entire Eastern Seaboard in exchange for me coming. But Red told me, Rich, he said, Bill, let me handle it. Don't you say a word. Let me take care of this. And he did. He was the master negotiator, and he got the job done. And ultimately, while I begged and pleaded and drove, initiated my trade to the Boston Celtics, I ultimately had to pay every dime of money I had to leave the Los Angeles Clippers. But it was the best money I've ever spent. Oh, my gosh, to be on that team, to be in that environment, in that culture. It was a dream come true, Rich. Because little Billy from San Diego, with his red hair and his big nose and his freckles and his goofy, nerdy-looking face and his horrendous speech impediment, even though I grew up in the heart of Laker country in San Diego, California, I was a Celtic fan. And the reason I was a Celtic fan was because of the way that Chick Hearn, the Laker broadcaster, used to describe the Celtics. Because while Chick was broadcasting for L.A. and for Elgin and for Jerry and ultimately for Wilt and Gale and all the guys in the history of the Lakers, the awe and the respect that Chick talked about Bill Russell, Red Auerbach, and the Boston Celtics. That's what led me to become just a huge Celtic fan from the earliest days when I started following the NBA back in 1962.
This was such a diverse group of individuals, talented guys, but an interesting collection of players on that team. What enabled them to all mesh so well together?
It was the leadership capabilities of Red Auerbach, who built the franchise. There has never been a great player, Rich. There's never been a great team. There's never been a great organization. There's never been a great company that didn't have a great leader, and that was Red Auerbach. And the culture, the family environment, the sense of pride and loyalty and gratitude, the emotions that drive people like me who are old and in the way today, but when you're young, you don't really understand all that stuff. But Red had created this world that we could all come and thrive in. And you had all these different guys, Larry from French Lick, Kevin from Hibbing, Chief from Louisiana, DJ from Compton, Danny from Eugene, Oregon, Jerry Seasting from Martinsville, Indiana, Rick Carlisle from all around the world, Scotty Wedman from Kansas and Colorado, and Greg Kite from Utah, and Sam Vincent and David Thirdkill, all the guys that just that came and wanted to be a part of something special. And that was my whole dream in life, was to try to be a part of a special team. And I had that in my life. I had an incredibly positive and constructive and nurturing childhood growing up in San Diego, get to go to UCLA, have that dream come true, play in Kareem's shadow and for John Wooden and for UCLA and the University of California, then to go over to join the NBA with the Portland Trail Blazers and Jack Ramsey and Maurice Lucas and Lionel Hollins and Johnny Davis and Bob Gross, and then the Boston Celtics. Oh, my gosh. Because all those guys, I mean, they were my heroes from the early days. Russell, Sam, Casey, Satch, Tommy, these absolute legends who were not the biggest, not the strongest, not the fastest, couldn't jump the highest, but they played as a team. And they played with heart, and they played with passion. And when little Billy would be watching these games with Chris Schenkel and Jack Twyman calling the games back in the 60s for ABC, and I would just look with awe and amazement as they'd go up against Oscar Robertson, as they go up against Elgin Baylor, as they go up against Will Chamberlain, and the Celtics would always win. And little Billy would say to himself, man, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. If only I could have done more to help the Boston Celtics win more championships. Man, that's all I wanted in life was more.
Bill, this is Ryan. How long into that 85-86 season before you got the sense that something special was happening?
I knew that the basketball would be good. I didn't know how good. I had played against Chief. I had played against DJ a bunch when I was in the early part of my NBA career before everything fell apart with all the endless string of injuries and the stress fractures, and oh my gosh, what a nightmare. What I didn't know how good Larry and Kevin were. I didn't know what a remarkable athlete Danny Ainge is. It's staggering that Danny Ainge is not in the Basketball Hall of Fame. That guy is just absolutely incredible. He was such a critical part to the team's success. What I also didn't know was how cool and great life was in New England. I mean, come on, I grew up in California. People like me, we are firm believers that if the Pilgrims had landed in San Diego, are you kidding? New England, that's going to be one big national park, big wilderness area. But because of the people I got to meet there, the people I still have as friends in the great state of Maine, Kevin Frazier, Dave Cowens, these true, pure tigers in trances, saints of circumstance, who were just out there willing to fight for a better America, a better state of Maine, and just to be able to see how fantastic and special it was in the community that Boston, New England is. And that sense of accomplishment, the sense of happiness, the sense of joy, the sense of we're all in this together. And that spirit, which was embodied in the Boston Celtics, and Bill Russell, my favorite player ever. But from the very beginning, when Larry was just torching everybody, Larry was the best player in the world. Kevin was unstoppable. Kevin was the second greatest low post player I ever played against. Kareem was the best, but Kevin, unstoppable. Kevin did not have the physical, the natural physical gifts that Kareem had. But his skill level, his footwork, his creative imagination, his passion, his unrelenting determination to score in your face. And then Chief was the anchor. He was the franchise. He was the foundation. Without him, Larry and Kevin could not have done their thing. And Chief willingly accepted that role to just do everything in anonymity. And to just not ever get any of the credit, not ever get any of the respect. But that's when you're on a great team. That's the way it works. Nobody really cares about whose team it is or who gets the money or who gets the stats or who gets the credit and the recognition. It's that the team wins. And that all came back to Red Auerbach. And then DJ, who earlier in his career had been the best guard in all of basketball. That was just before Magic Johnson came on the scene. And then Danny Ainge, one of the truly remarkable athletes in the history of the world who could do anything. And these guys would just play so perfectly and do so many wonderful things. And the great thing about that Celtic team was that it could beat you in any way it wanted. It could beat you in a speed-up game, fast break. It could beat you in a slow-down, grinded-out game. Be in a scoring offensive explosion. It could beat you with a defensive struggle and slugfest. It could beat you in a rebounding game, in a passing game. The intangibles were phenomenal, and we had a coach that we loved, Casey Jones, who was the most like John Wooden of any coach I ever played for, on and off the court. We would do anything for that guy. He was the perfect leader. Never asked us to do anything he hadn't already done himself or wasn't willing to do. And he was the personification, Casey Jones, of Celtic pride. And it was just absolutely fantastic. He made it so fun, so upbeat, so positive, never wasted anything. There was never any mind games. Everybody just came to play, to work, to fight, to score, to celebrate. And at the end of the day, we had Larry Bird and nobody else did.
We have one last thing before we let you go, Bill, and I couldn't let the opportunity pass. As a fellow Deadhead and a guy that's seen a bunch of shows, is there ever one time that you experienced a Grateful Dead show where you felt like maybe, just maybe, they wrote the set list just for you?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Most every show I go to.
That's what I thought.
I used to. I'm a Deadhead, and I've been a Deadhead since 1967. And so that's like 48 years or something like that. I've lost track. But I used to be concerned about what they played. I used to be concerned about where they played. I used to hand in set lists to them all the time. And Jerry would just take it, and he'd look at it, he'd crumple this up and say, Bill, what are you thinking about here? And then maybe, just maybe, he would play one song. Now, I don't care about anything other than how they play. Doesn't matter where, doesn't matter what, as long as they're playing. And as they embark on this new summer tour right now, I'm going to be out there, Rich. I'm going to be in Boulder. I'm going to be in Alpine Valley. I can't come to Fenway, sadly. I got a professional commitment, longstanding, that I cannot get out of. I'd love to be there in Fenway, but I'll be on all the West Coast shows. I'll be in Portland. I'll be out at the Gorge. I'll be down in San Diego, my hometown. I'll be in Irvine, I'll be in Sacramento, I'll be in San Francisco, and I'll be in the pit. Now, I didn't think, after all these injuries, after all the years of just being in the miserable pain, after my spine failure and my legs not working anymore, for so long I could not get down in the pit. But now, I'm all better. I had my spine surgery, I had my knee replaced, and I'm back in that pit, and there's nothing like it. There was one night that I came with an entire set list, and I gave it to them, and they went out and they played it. It was over the top incredible. But most importantly is the fact that they're still out there creating. They're still out there chasing it down. They're still out there trying to make the world better. And when you think back about the Boston Celtics and what the Celtics mean in all of our lives, it's the same thing with the Grateful Dead. This group of guys with nothing, who came together with a common purpose and goal to make things better. And through a basketball, through Red Auerbach's vision, sacrifice, and passion, and compassion, and willingness to step to the front and say, I'll take care of this, through the guys in the Grateful Dead, Jerry, Bob, Phil, BK, Mickey, myriad of piano players, these guys, they had nothing. They were homeless hippies living in their cars, yet they came together and they stuck together and they kept chasing it down and they kept going for it all. And over the course of the last 51 years, these guys have just been able to create this incredible world and culture that I am so lucky to be a part of. I will forevermore be a member of the Boston Celtics. It was a dream come true. The same thing with the Grateful Dead. I am truly, Rich, the luckiest guy in the world. I can't wait for the next game. I can't wait for the next show. I'll be out there. Turn it up, play it loud, play it fast, but mostly take the emotion and use the tools that you have at your disposal, whether it's a basketball, a guitar, a piano, a drum set, and beautify what is often a sad, hard, very cruel world. Because in life, all the negatives, all the evil can always be traced to three things: lack of honor, selfishness, and greed. The positive things, they can always be traced to two elements in a group dynamic: sacrifice and discipline. That's the Boston Celtics. That's the Grateful Dead. Let me in. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I'll be at the pit. Let's get going.
I love it.
I love the Boston Celtics. I love the Grateful Dead. I'm Bill Walton. I'm the lucky. on.